So I got asked this question. This guy was like, hey, he DM'd me. He goes, Sean, big fan. Whatever the next sentence you type to me, I'm going to do it or I'll die trying. And I was like, okay. And then he's like, I'm going to get to $10,000 a month of passive income profits after, you know, and you know, I'm thinking either A, I start a newsletter, B, I do this other thing. And this is like all like kind of like stuff we do, either stuff we do or like topics we talk about, like e-commerce, newsletter, or this other thing. Which one do you think is going to get me there the fastest or the best? Like, which one's the best path? And I was like, I don't know, dude, those all seem pretty hard to get to 10K a month. Like, you know, if your goal is really 10K a month, you know, I don't know, a job will probably get you there. But if let's take that off the table for a second, let's assume you don't want a job or you don't have maybe the degree to get a six-figure job. I was like, I would just do a productized service.
Dude, Sean, so here's the deal. We are officially we're popular enough that you have to get your podcast set up right. So what I'm going to do is I talked to Ben. We're having someone come to your house and my house, and they're going to put a two camera setup. So they're going to like cut back and forth, but you've got to make that room, and they'll help you, but you're going to have to make that room look good. And it's going to be ready every time.
Dude, that's great. Also, related to that, I found a new house that I might move into that's way nicer. And I was like, my main motivation was to make this podcast look better. I was like, you know, I kind of look like a scrub on this podcast. Like, you know, like right now I don't have my haircut, don't have my beard trim, don't have my room nice. I was like, if 100,000 plus people consume this every time, like I would never go out in front of a stadium like this.
Like, right.
I wouldn't even let three friends come to my house and look at my office like this. Why do I let 100,000 people see the office, see the recording studio like this? Simply for convenience. But there's that. Also, I found on, have you ever used PeerSpace? It's like a Airbnb for rentals that are not houses, like not necessarily houses to stay in. It's like just for a venue. And there's a place near me for $75 an hour for recording podcasts. That's like a two camera setup with a sick couch and stuff like that. It'd be great for in-person stuff, but if we're not in person, you know, it's just me sitting on a giant couch.
I'm going to do it. I'll come out there and we'll finally do it. Ben wanted me to come out there, but I didn't want to fly, but whatever, I'll do it. I was talking to HubSpot or someone and I was saying like, hey, yeah, give us budget to make our studio nice. Cause we're like the lowest maintenance people you have. I was like, for example, 2 weeks ago, Sean recorded a podcast with literally just one AirPod because he didn't have a mic and the other AirPod ran out of batteries. So he just used his AirPod and his laptop. So like, I think we're due. We're owed one.
That's hilarious. What I was going to say, there's this guy. I wish I could give him a shout out. I don't know what his name is, but I kind of want to steal his idea. So this guy has this course. It's an on-demand course that is only about how to make your video camera go from like a before to an after. And I was like, oh, this is the smartest course I've ever seen.
Ben knows his name.
I don't think. Ben, you know his name?
Yeah, his name is Kevin Shen.
Kevin Shen, yeah. Actually, I shouldn't shout it. Bleep that out. I'm going to make it my own competitor course. So bleep this guy out. I'm going to copy him. No, but
your setup sucks, dude. It's like a fat person giving a course on how to lose weight.
I'm the before story. Just wait until you see my after.
You're the way before story.
we all know there's the way before, there's the before, and then there's the after. I'm currently in a before. The way before was the one AirPod recording on no microphone no light. And I'm going to do the after, and then I'm just going to turn that into a 1 hour thing, and it just says, here's the thing to buy. And then, because here's the problem. I've watched a bunch of these YouTube tutorials and they're like, oh yeah, go get the Sony A5 or you can get the A6 or you can get the D340. And it's like, all right, well, dude, which one? And then you buy it and they're like, yeah, just connect it to your computer. And then, okay, see, now it looks good. And I was like, yeah, but you like, there was like seven things in between there that like everything went wrong. And they're like, okay, you know, you want to, there's one guy who's like, confusing. You know, there's some people who show you how to put your lights up or whatever, but dude, this is the new, like your webcam is the new face, like
the new business suit.
It's basically, it's your suit. It's like what people see. Like this one time, this guy told me, he goes, yeah, dude, I got to go get my haircut. And I was like, how much you spend on your haircut? Cause I was like, he has nice hair. And I was like, it kind of made it sound like a big deal. Like I can't do anything today. I got to go get my haircut. And I was like, I just kind of like you know, it's like in the middle of another task, I'm getting my haircut. Like, that's kind of how I roll.
Yeah, like if the Great Clips, you know, just so happens to be in the mall that you're at.
Yeah, exactly. Like, which Supercuts do you go to? And he was like, yeah, no, I go to this one place. She's been cutting my hair for years. I have a standing appointment. And blah, blah, blah. I was like, damn, dude, you're like really into your hair. He goes, your hair is like half of your face. And I was like, oh, shit. It's so true.
Yeah, but you're not into the other half either. So it's all good. Right? Like, you don't moisturize or anything.
I was like, damn, he's right. I'm just leaving 50% up to Supercuts. Like, that ain't right. Like, good hair is like an extra 2 inches of height as far as, like, you know, that goes. So anyways.
All right. So here's the deal. Things are changing fast in the tech world and the internet marketing world. And that's a big deal because you have to know which trends to stay on top of in order to market better, in order to acquire customers for cheap, and so you can run your business as efficiently as possible. Staying on top of all those trends is a pain in the butt, though. And so the folks at HubSpot have made this amazing report. It has a very official sounding name because it is a very official document. It's the 2024 State of Marketing Report. They've looked at millions, tens of millions of bits of data to find the top marketing trends that have the most immediate impact on your business. And so what HubSpot did was they surveyed over 1,400 marketing pros from across the world, and they looked at what are people using effectively, what's not working, more importantly, and they've been able to compile it in a really easy to read document. So if you want to learn ways how to optimize for social, or how to boost engagement, or how to strike the right balance between privacy but still being personal with your customers, go to HubSpot.com/state of marketing to get the free copy, or just Google HubSpot State of Marketing and it'll come up. Check it out.
Dude, speaking of being speaking of being really good looking, did you see the tweet that happened today? So this woman, this like good looking woman and her good looking husband,
hey, she's married, dude. Back off.
They're both handsome. They're a beautiful couple, and they she sent me this message basically, and I shared the screenshots on Twitter, but basically, a year ago, you tweeted something. I sent you the tweet. I actually forget what. Do you remember what it was?
No, I didn't see the tweet. What was the original tweet? Is it interesting? Yeah. Does it matter?
She said it was like really cringe that she even replied to it in the first place. But here, I'll pull it up. So basically, you said, I have zero interest in buying a fancy car. You know what I want? A personal in-house chef. I can't think of a better way to spend money than a chef. How do I start getting one next week? And she replied like, hey, hire me. I'm a chef, but I've got about 32 other skills. Whatever. And this guy DM'd her and she said that they were just talking about, like, I guess the chef business or something like that. yeah, I mean, it was clear what was going on in the get-go, but she sent me the first message and they were just like talking, shooting the shit.
Then he's like, hey, whatever the thing you were talking about, I'm super interested. Tell me more about whatever that was.
Well, and he's from Indiana and she's from Ireland. And so she's in Europe, he's in America, and they start talking back and forth the DMs. Then they get on a call, and she said they hit it off. And after 2 weeks of just constant calls, he booked a flight to Europe. And for 2 weeks, they like had this great time. And then now, a year later, so she moved to America. It's been a year about since that tweet. They're getting married in a couple months. And it was all because she said that she listened to MFM and read The Hustle. She started listening to this. She started commenting on your stuff and my stuff. He noticed that. And then they like, I think his in was like talking about like the pod and like, oh, you like them too? And it totally worked. She sent me a picture of them. They're both tens. It's a good looking couple. So our new tagline is MFM, getting you paid and laid.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And I am sure all of our listeners are as good looking as them.
Yeah, I don't think so, but they did a good job. But I was showing this to my mom, and I'm like, see, it's not just neckbeards that listen to this. Like, it's actually like, you know, like real people who like shower and stuff. But it looks good. I'm happy for these people. So shout out to them.
Maybe we should do a date night every 9 months, and we should just bring together listeners, and it's just speed dating, and let's just see what happens.
It's gonna be
like
you know, Greg and Steve. Everyone's gonna be named like Chris and Tucker. Like, it's gonna be all guys. Like, so only come if you're looking for a man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. See, we got the tagline too, so it's perfect. That is a pretty cool moment, though. I'm glad that that happened. That's kind of crazy that that happened. And, but Ben, producer Ben, young producer Ben, we need your story. Did you do anything bold when you met your wife? Did you do, like, this guy, a pretty bold move, right? Slide into the DMs.
Yeah.
Figure out some excuse to call each other every day, then book a flight, go over there and fall in love, get married. That's kind of amazing. Did you, either of you guys do any bold moves?
We were set up on a blind date, and it was my boss at the time, CEO, my boss's boss, CEO of the company I was working for. I ran into him one night and he was like, "Oh, do you know Katie Jowers? You have to take her out." And so he sent a text to both of us. That was like, it sounded like a work email. He was like, "Katie, I have CC'd Ben here. He's a great employee and will take you on a nice date." And I was like, "All right, well, I guess I'm locked in."
Why did he know that you should take her out a date?
Well, you guys, was she Mormon too?
Yeah. This was Utah. So we're all Mormon. Everyone in the story is Mormon.
And how tall is she?
She's 5'11".
Well, there, that's why. He's like, you guys are both big, tall, white Mormons. You should procreate.
Again, you're describing everyone in the state of Utah, though. Like, the whole population is tall, white Mormons.
You said it like it was a movie twist. You're like, but here's the thing. I'm Mormon. She was Mormon. Everybody in the story was Mormon. It's like the end of The Sixth Sense. It's like, he was a ghost, and I'm a ghost. With this whole thing. This whole movie's about ghosts.
That's awesome.
So no great DM, sorry.
Dude, all right. I have something interesting that I saw, Sean. I posted a link to this subreddit, to this Reddit post that I saw right before I logged into this, to the podcast, and I linked it to you. So basically, there's this subreddit called Fatfire that I like. I've sent it to you. And every once in a while, you get these amazing stories about people because they reveal like their income and things like that. And I've been following this lawyer. He's a 38-year-old.
Well, explain what FatFire is.
Yeah, so FatFire.
People don't know what FatFire is.
So FIRE stands for Financially Independent Retired Early. Traditionally, it's like a movement of people who want to save like $500,000 to $1 million and live off of like $30,000 or $40,000 a year. That's not exactly what it means, but that's like traditionally like with the stereotype. FatFire means you want to retire in early and be financially independent, but you want to be doing it fat. So you want to like, you know, save like $20 million or something like that. So you want to start a company, sell it, and retire. And so it's people who want to retire while they're young and do it by still living lavishly. And it sounds douchey, but it's actually quite interesting. It's all like entrepreneurs, bankers, tech people who like work at a, it's just like rich people shit, and which is always fun to like be voyeuristic. And so there's this guy, he's a 38-year-old personal injury lawyer. And for the past 4 years, he's given an update every couple of years, and he explains everything that's going on in his business. And so his background is basically that he went to a good school and then worked at one of the big law firms, which is like something that you like grind for 80 hours a week and hopefully climb your way up. And eventually you make $1 million a year after 10 or 15 years, but it's kind of boring and you're like kind of like your boss's bitch for a long time and it just kind of sucks. And so he goes, you know what? Screw this. A friend of his got hurt and he goes, hey, I'll represent you. Just pay me whatever's fair. And then he did, and he won. And then a few other people started coming to him, just word of mouth. And so he was doing this in the evenings while he was still working his main job. And after a year, he quit to do his own thing. That's when his income from his moonlighting became bigger than his normal thing. So fast forward now, I believe it's been about 8 years since he's been doing this. So 2014 to 2022. And he's listed out his income as well as his net worth, breaking it down by assets for every single year. So in year one, it was $300,000, two, $600,000, $800,000, $1.2 million, $3 million, $5.6 million, $6 million, $6 million. And this year so far, $3.3, and it's going to be $8 million this year. And that's personal income. Basically, he has these posts where he breaks down exactly how his businesses work, what his current plan is, what his growth challenges are, what his marketing is. And basically, he's got like 5 attorneys that work for him, and he's slowly built up to that. He gets a little bit of cut of all that they have. They have 300 cases that they do a year. He talks about growth challenges, which is that they're struggling with the CRM. They don't have a CRM. Everything's done manually, and it's a lot of work. And one of his goals is to automate a lot of stuff. But it's incredibly fascinating for two reasons. One, this is a sick business, right? Like, it's like just a 37-year-old smart person, but he doesn't seem like that particularly extraordinary, but he's like killing it now. He says that his net worth is currently $5.8 million and his kids have a trust fund of $1.7 million. And then secondly, why this is cool, for a couple reasons. One, Alex Hormozi was a guest here. He had this business called Gym Launch, where he basically worked with gyms where you paid him $20,000 or $30,000 and he set up your whole CRM and he set up all the automated emails for onboarding and just kind of set up the automation flow. Someone should do that for these personal injury attorneys. This is awesome. They have way more money than gyms, and there's probably just as many of them. I have no idea, but probably. I don't know. What do you think about this post? This is pretty cool, right?
I can't find this client info.
Have you heard of HubSpot? HubSpot is a CRM platform, so it shares its data across every application. Every team can stay aligned. No out-of-sync spreadsheets or dueling databases. HubSpot, grow better.
This is great. I don't go on FatFire as much as you do. I do it from time to time, but I don't like, I don't know, I need to like add it to my feed or whatever. But yeah, this is great. 38 years old, $15 million net worth, not five. And then the $6 million in annual income is actually the more stunning part. Like, I'm not surprised that a lawyer at 40 can have $15 million in net worth. It's the $6 million in annual income that's sort of like stunning, which makes me want to understand this personal injury lawyer business better. Like he says, like, you know, I do no marketing. I basically just hand out business cards. Plus I get referrals from my existing clients. But that is a ton. That is a ton of like take home from your, like your legal practice. I don't think that's common. So I wonder what he's doing that's uncommon. Like he talks about, look, these cases basically like, you know, it's not about more cases, like 300 cases could end up being worth more than 3000 cases because you know, you get paid based on the outcome, you know, the profits of the cases. But
man,
isn't
I
that
think
kind of weird. Like, I don't think
that's so. This guy's in Southern California, so maybe he's in San Diego. So it's a pretty big city. But I think if you look at the top 20 cities in America, if you look at the billboards, it's always personal injury lawyers. And there's this one guy in Austin's like a top 15 city, maybe. And he says that his earnings are, I forget exactly what it says his earnings are, but I looked him up on Instagram and he's got a collection of like 15 Ferraris. He was in the newspaper because he had a birthday party for his daughter or for himself. And he had like Rod Stewart or someone crazy. And he spent like $3 million on that. And they talked about his home and he was donating checks for $2 or $3 million. And that was in Austin. His name was Thomas, I think, something Thomas. And I think I know a personal injury attorney in St. Louis. And he's got a mansion in Miami. He's got a place in St. Louis where we're from. I mean, I think some of these guys could really roll in it and be netting 10 or 20 a year.
Yeah, it's wild. And I like that idea of the gym launch for X. I think you're right with lawyers. Like I see this right now. My father-in-law has senior living facilities and he's always like, you know, I'm like, how's biz? And he's like, oh, it's good or it's bad. But his thing is always just like, you know, we have a 64 bed facility and every bed in the facility. So like, let's say, so this is like a senior living care center. So basically what he does, his model is like, he'll buy one. So say it has 32 beds, but it's permitted for up to 80. And just the current owner, like doesn't really have the motivation or the construction experience. And so he just looks for that first. He's like, all right, you have a good business and I can expand. I can just double the number of beds, which will double the net income of this roughly, which will double the value of this property. So if I'm buying it for four, this will be worth 8 to 10 by the time I'm done with it. And I got to put in $2 million in construction, just round numbers, just for argument's sake. Then he has a management company that will actually like run the thing. Cause I was like, dude, do you know how to run a senior living facility? Like, isn't that hard and weird? And he's like, well, like I don't go there. Like I found one really good property management company and they run all my properties. And I was like, wow, okay. He's like, yeah, she's been doing this for 30 years. That's what she does. And like, she, you know, she gets a cut. And then the other thing he was saying, he was like, you know, it's all about occupancy, right? Just like any hospitality type of business, you know, every bed they pay us on average, let's say $6,000 to $8,000 per month. So, you know, if we just get like four more bookings, you know, these are, that adds an extra, whatever, you know, $30,000 a month or whatever to our revenue, which is great. And so what he'll do is every time I ask him, how's business going? He's just like, oh, it's good. We lost two clients. You know, we're going to place another one today. And I'm like, how do you get clients? And he's basically like, oh, you know, we kind of like, she networks with the hospitals. They know her. So they send her some people. I'm like, do you advertise at all? He's like, no, how do I do that? And I was like, oh shit. I was like if somebody Google searches, like, you know, senior living near me and like, yeah, your city name, like, do you come up? And he's like, no. and there's like these aggregators, like these search engines that they SEO rank to the top. But I was like,
I knew a guy.
I
knew a guy who owned one of those search engines and he was making a couple million bucks a year. And basically he would come up on top on Google and then sell the lead for $200 to your guy. And he would buy that lead and then hopefully close them to make $8,000 a month.
Exactly. And so I was like, you should either be buying these leads, you should set up some referral system, you should take, you know, local newspaper ads, local magazines, like, you know, I don't know, got to do something on the marketing side. And he's just like, I don't know that. Like, basically, he looks at marketing the way I would look at what he says, which is, well, like, just do a renovation and like take it from 32 beds to 64 beds and then get the permits for the memory care from the city and then do this right. and that. It's like, what? Like, I got to read this manual and figure out like what color the elevator buttons need to be. Like, I'm out. I just can't do this. I fail. And like, that's what, dude, set up a Google AdWords account like feels like to him. And so I think there's that arbitrage, which is basically how many people are there that are injury lawyers, senior living centers, pool construction companies that just simply don't know digital marketing. And like, can you build either a lead gen business or go like consult and help them and like take a share of the increase in revenue, like Gym Launch? It just seems like that is one of like, that is one of the easiest ways to do it. So I got asked this question. This guy was like, hey, he DM me, he goes, Sean, big fan. Whatever the next sentence you type to me, I'm going to do it or I'll die trying. And I was like, okay. And then he's like, I'm going to get to $10,000 a month of passive income profits after, you know, and you know, I'm thinking either A, I start a newsletter, B, I do this other thing. And this, it was like, all like kind of like stuff we do, either stuff we do or like topics we talk about, like e-commerce, newsletter, or this other thing. Which one do you think is going to get me there the fastest or the best? Like, which one's the best path? And I was like, I don't know, dude, those all seem pretty hard to get to 10K a month. Like, you know, if your goal is really 10K a month, you know, I don't know, a job will probably get you there. But if let's take that off the table for a second, let's assume you don't want a job or you don't have maybe the degree to get a six figure job. I was like, I would just do a productized service. He's like, what does that mean? I was like, okay, even just skip productize, just a service. I was like, totally. You know, basically find one niche of a business and figure out what you can do that helps them make more money. So I was like, maybe it's just email marketing services for e-commerce companies. Maybe it's lead gen for pool construction companies. Maybe it's, you know, this, it's like, you know, the Gym Launch playbook where it's like, yeah, I'll just do sales calls for you. And like, I'll help you close X, you know, new customers every month, or, you know, I'll make your website convert 1% better, you know, through a series of experiments, and you pay me a flat fee of four grand a month. And like that 1% for you is going to be worth at least 10X more than that. You know, these are the simplest things. I was like, and then what do you do? How do you get clients? Like, let's assume you don't have any money. You create content that just talks about, like, for example, if you're doing conversion rate optimization for an e-commerce store, you just post, check out what these guys do in their add to cart, you know, in their cart shopping cart that improves conversion by 8%. Check out what these guys do with their email pop-up. Check out what these guys do with their checkout buttons. And we did this change and this changed this percent. Or like, here's a collection of the best, you know, whatever, designs for landing pages. And people will see that and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's smart. And one time you do it, they'll be like, huh, that's smart. The second time they'll be like, those are smart. Third time you do it, they'll be like, he's smart. Let me just hire this guy. I just want this problem solved. And like, you could do that and you can get to 10, 20, 30K a month of profit. And that is a way better path than like, I think what most people think about doing instead.
Yeah. And also I hate that question because I get that all the time too. I'm like, I don't fucking know, man. What are you good at? Like, I don't know. Like, go play in the NBA. Like, I have to know like what your attributes are. I hate that question. I'm just like, you know what I mean? It's the stupidest question ever. I cannot stand that because they just want me to like tell them what to do. You like that one? They just want me to tell them what to do. But when you have zero context, it's just useless bullcrap advice.
Yeah, I can see that. But also, I don't know. I kind of empathize. Like,
I empathize, unless but I think it's stupid. I can understand why you asked that and think it's stupid.
I understand why you're doing this stupid thing. Totally get it.
Yeah, I would have I asked that question too, and now I know it's not the right question.
Yeah, but then you got to follow up with what is the right question.
Well, you just need more context, you know.
Who's stupid now? Who's stupid now, stupid?
Well, I never said I wasn't either. Dude, did you know that Elon Musk, do you know Elon Musk has a sister?
What kind of amazing subject change is that? No, I didn't know that. I only knew about Kimball Musk.
Okay, well, Elon's got a sister, and she owns this thing called PassionFlix.com. It's basically like audio erotica, I believe. Like you know, like it's it, the tagline is.
I'm familiar.
Yeah. the
more passion. Of a video guy myself, but all right. Yeah. I guess you could always close the tab. Just listen.
The subject or the tagline is passion flicks. Get your passion on. Romance on demand for $6 a month. And it's basically romance novels, which we had talked about in your ears, I guess.
Yeah.
Like audiobooks. But I mean, you know,
do we get credit for this? Like, does Elon Musk's sister listen to the pod? Because we've been talking about this for a long time, and I think you should tell the story again because the pod's much bigger than the first time. Tell your story about the romance novel thing. Tell first the story about how you did it for The Hustle as a marketing stunt, and then what you did with our buddy.
All right. So for The Hustle, when we the very first article we ever launched, we had to come out with a bang, and I knew this guy who basically would plagiarize other people's books on how to sleep with women, and he would get a Filipino to rewrite it so it passed the Kindle plagiarism like filter, and then he would game it by buying reviews, and he was making $50,000 to $60,000 a month. And like, I would joke with him, but I was like, dude, A, this is super unethical, and B, you don't even sleep with women. Like, you don't know anything about this topic. I can't believe you're like living this lie, but whatever. He was making money. And so we wrote an article about that when it first came out. And to prove that it was legit, because a lot of people didn't believe us, we go, fine, watch, we're going to copy this and do it. And instead of doing in like the how to sleep with women category, we did it for romance the romance category. Because if you look at the liquidity of the marketplace on Amazon, romance novels has the most amount of buyers and also like the most amount of transactions. Like these women are always buying this stuff. And so we like looked at like what the popular categories were, and there was like women who want to have sex with like a werewolf. There was like women who want to have sex with like military people, and so we made
fantasies, right?
Yeah, like, and so we made like a
military guy, a rich billionaire guy, right? That's 50 Shades of Grey. A vampire, that's Twilight, right? That's how these fantasies.
Vampire, are. That's what. So we made it like a military vampire werewolf guy. We like combined all of them, and then we found like the title.
Is
like
that really what you did?
Yeah. Well, we did that for the title. So we found a book that was good and we just like plagiarized it and then like made the title like in the description about like a vampire, werewolf, military guy, billionaire. I forget. Like it was like a joke. We did all of them. And then we gamed the system. So in a couple weeks or in a week, we were the number one best selling in a particular category. And we like changed our LinkedIn to like best selling author. And because we were like, how do we get like speaking gigs now? And which I didn't know at the time, but we actually plagiarized the largest romance publisher in the world, Harlequin Books. And they called us. And I thought they were going to like sue us because they sent this angry email. And then in the email or on the call, they're like, look, we get it. You're not really making fun of romance novels. You're making fun of this like Kindle thing, which we agree is silly. But you use us as an example. No big deal. We get it. But you got to take it down. So we took it down. So whatever. And so I've always been curious about this industry. And so about 2 years ago, maybe three years ago, my friend Ramon and I, we created this website called Captivating. I don't know, what was it called? The first book was called Captivating Claire. What was this? That was the book that we launched, Captivating Claire. What was the book? Short But Romantic. We launched a website called shortbutromantic.wordpress.com. And we basically, we got someone on Fiverr.
By the way, shortbutromantic.wordpress.com is the least short and least romantic domain you could possibly have chosen.
Yeah, it was horrible. We created Short But Romantic, and we got someone on Fiverr to write like a part one of like a sexy story thing. Like, I frankly didn't even read it. And then we got another Fiverr guy to narrate it. And then we put it on the website and we said part one of like Captivating Claire or whatever it was. And it was like, read the story. And then at the end it said, do you want part two? Sign up here for $25 a month and we'll send one of these every single day. And we put ads on Facebook for it. And I made like, I found like this girl that I went to college with and it was like, hey, can I use your face on this this website and act like you're the author and like you're the one behind it? Because it wouldn't look good if it was me. And so we did. And we got like $500 in revenue in like 12 hours because the ad rate was crazy. And if you went to the website, people were commenting on this saying like, this story's amazing. I love this. I want more of this. You saw it, right?
Yeah. I remember seeing the prototype and it was like, dude, Sam is a genius, man. Like, I love how you spin these things up. I love the names that you pick. I love the speed to launch. I love the way that you did the test, which was most people would go and spend months trying to find an author and write a book. And you were like, you know, you just were like, okay, werewolf, military, you know, blonde girl named Claire. Claire wants to feel captured. No, Claire wants to feel, you know, contemplated. No, captivated. Yes, sorry, captivating Claire. Claire wears a red dress and she bumps into this billionaire and his hand grazes her thigh and that's it. We got it. All right, we're working now. And like, I just see, I saw the website and I just saw your fingerprints all over it. So I was like, I remember being so impressed. And I tried, we invested in our buddy for this because I was like, dude, this is a great market to be in. And if you're kind of growth hacky, you're going to do this. And if nobody else is doing this, right? Like, it was like, there's so little competition because most serious people could never bring themselves to do this. So it's just, you're going to compete with the other not so serious people that are out there on earth. And like, I would put our skills up there with any of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a good idea actually. But the thing that was the thing was like, I don't give a shit about this. Neither did he, you know, like this was exactly what we weren't exactly fueled by this passion to create these like sex novels. And so we kind of like shut it down. But a listener, a podcast listener, did something like this and he spun it up, I think, to 10,000 in revenue a month, like really fast. Right.
Yeah, that's what I think. So and then also there was a difference. I think there's a difference between like literal audio porn and then like romance novels. And this, I think, passion flicks that what Elon Musk's sister is doing is the romance novels on demand, $5.99 a month. So I actually think this is a great idea. You know, I think this is a great idea. If you're good at internet marketing and you're like, you know, got a good sort of sense of humor about yourself, I think that this is a business that will work if you apply enough pressure. It's hard though to like stay excited about it for a long time unless you just love selling widgets. In fact, our buddy Ramon, the first time I met him, you introduced me to him. We go out to a lunch. He's telling me his life story, and his life story is full of like substance. It's like, you know, I was raised in the Netherlands, and then like, you know, I had this, you know, I was kind of like out on my own at a young age. And then like, I'm a single father to my son and blah, 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 like whatever. He, you know, had a bunch of things that were like, you know, these journeys throughout his lifetime that were like, you know, these I've made, you know, I train MMA. Like he seemed like a dude who like, you know, he really kind of like, you know, was self-made in many ways. And then I was like, so do you like, I kind of expected him to be like, you know, so that's why I'm working on this thing that has like this deep meaning also. And I was like, so what was your last business? He's like, oh, created a soap opera blog and I sold it for $10 million. And I was like, what? I was like, cause you love soap operas? He's like, no, never seen one in my life. I was like, what the hell? And I was like, how did this work? He's like, and he's the second episode of this podcast. So if you scroll all the way back to the second episode, I think it's Ramon. It's one of the best episodes ever that's been on the podcast feed. But basically he's like, yeah, I just went on Facebook and there was an arbitrage opportunity where like you could buy Facebook page likes. Facebook wanted to promote pages. So you could advertise a page for like, you could get a like for like a cent. And I just figured out, oh, cool. Once I get them to like my page, I could post a link. Then I'll get them to my website. And like, okay, that costs like 7 cents to get them to my website. And then Google AdSense can give me 9 cents or 12 cents or whatever. Like there's some like money arbitrage there. So he's like, so then I just had to figure out what is the, you know, what's the best category. He's like, so I spun up like 22 Facebook pages about every niche I could think of.
And yeah, his niche was, it was like WWF wrestling and like soccer and like politics and just a bunch of crazy stuff.
Yeah. Oh, every interest you could think of. And he's like, okay, which one's the best? And he said the top three, I think, were wrestling. The number one was like right-wing conservative politics, yeah, which, you know, turned out to be like what Facebook, you know, really, really like overran Facebook also.
And he was like, I just don't want to do this. It doesn't make anyone happy.
Yeah. So that one, he's like, all right, I'm gonna scratch that out. He goes, then the next two are wrestling and soap operas. And he's like, all right, let's do soap opera. I don't like soap opera wrestling. He never really told me that part, but whatever. So details. So he's like, all right, well, what do people care about? They care about, it's like spoilers. Like what's going to happen on tomorrow's Days of Our Lives? And it turns out you could just like buy or like you could just sign up to get the like the sneak peek of like the synopsis of what happens tomorrow. And he would just like publish that as a long form thing. And he hired some people to write for it, and so some women were writing for this stuff, whatever. So he was doing that, and he ends up selling the thing for $10 million in cash. Basically
it was making like $300,000-$400,000 a month in profit. It was very profitable.
Yeah. And so you met him. He reached out to you from the hustle. He goes, here's my story. You know, I want to tell it. And you were like, no way. This sounds fake. And he's like, well, here's my analytics and here's my bank account. Like, go ahead and look. And you were like, what? And you guys met. And yeah, you guys are like best friends. So you introduced me. You're like, hey, you in the email, you go, Sean, meet Ramon. And you're like, Sean's a good buddy, smart guy, nice, like, you know, normal intro stuff. And you're like, Sean, this is Ramon. I trust Ramon with my life. I was like, wow, that was an incredible intro.
How do you remember that?
Because it stuck out to me, right? I was like, so, I don't know, this is one of those writing things. I'm like, wow, that was amazing. And then I met Ramon, and I also now trust Ramon with my life. He's just that kind of guy. And so he told me at that meeting, he goes, I was like, so you'll just work on whatever, or like for your next thing, you know, are you going to do something like soap operas or whatever? He goes, you see this cup? And it's like a little, like, you know, at a restaurant, the water cups are the shitty plastic ones. He goes, if I could just move this cup from here to here, and it's like, I make a dollar doing that, then I'm a cup salesman. Like, he's basically like, I'll sell anything. Like, and so what ended up happening was he was going to do this romance thing, and you guys spun up this test and it started to work. And, but one of his other businesses that he had bought was like started to work even better. And so he just kind of he tried to both for a little while, but he's like,
and that other one was equally as weird. It was a dog ramp business for wiener dogs so they can get on the couch.
Yeah, actually, it's even worse than the plastic cup. He's like, do you have a wiener dog? No. Well, if you did, you know that if they tried to jump on or off the bed, they could get hurt. I guess so. Yeah, we make and sell ramps for wiener dogs to get in on and off the bed. I was like, what? Yeah. And he was like, yeah, we'll do like, you know, $7 million this year. I was like, what the hell? And so, you know, then that business grew like crazy or whatever. And so I was like, wow, this guy is like, you know, this guy, he was just so different than everybody else in Silicon Valley. I loved it. I loved how different he was. He lived here, but it was like an alien living in Silicon Valley. Like, he just did not have anything to do with software or venture capital or like high tech stuff. He was literally like a cup salesman wandering around Silicon Valley, making millions of dollars selling like the most arbitrary, like, you know, gadgets, like, you know, fidget spinners to, you know, like elderly.
When I first met him, he was wearing like sweatpants and like a shirt with holes in it and like old Jordans. And he's like a huge, like big white dude. And I'm like, and he has an accent, you know, and I was talking to him like, what, who is this guy? And we start walking back to his car because I was going back to my office and I was walking him to his car and I see he had a brand new Tesla at the time, the nicest, fanciest Tesla. It was like $150,000. I was like, oh, sick car. He was like, thanks, bro. Had to pay all cash for it because I don't have a credit score. And I was like, what? I guess you're legit.
Yeah, and we make him sound braggy, but he is the opposite of braggy. Like, he'll just be like, like, he'll just show up with something or like, I don't know, like he'll do something that you're like, that makes no sense whatsoever. And then when you dig in, it's because he like always takes the hard, weird path to do stuff in this hilarious way. And it's what makes him incredible. I love it.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Like he got diagnosed with like a herniated disc and then like on the way home from the doctor, like signed up for an Ironman. And it's like, what are you doing? Why are you choosing this?
I did the Ironman with him.
Why must you choose violence?
Dude, I did the Ironman with him. It was me, him, and Suli. And Ramon literally got last. He got last that he was so slow that he didn't train at all. He just showed up. And when he got he had this bike. And he was like, hey, could someone show me how I use these shoes that clip into the pedals? Like, he didn't know how to, like, he was, like, riding his bike for, like, the first time, like, taking the tag off of it. And it's an Ironman. It's really hard. And he got dead last, but he finished. Like, the golf cart was rolling behind him, and it was getting dark at night, and they were about to pull him off the course. But he, like, pushed him off, and he goes, I'm finishing.
Oh, that's incredible. All right, let's do some other ones. I got some I got an idea and then a bad idea that I have and then a really good idea for a company that I just heard about. Which one do you want?
The good one. I would like enough. I've got a bad one and a better one. Do you want the better or the bad?
All right, so the great one. There's a company called Ghost that I just heard about. So this story to me is kind of incredible. So if you go
the
to
WordPress
the website,
competitor?
I think it's, no, it's a new one. So GHST. So it's Ghost without the O. I think it's ghost.io is the name of it.
Oh, this is so, already too new age for me. I'm out.
No. You're gonna appreciate this. You're out, but I'm gonna bring you back in. Here's the deal. So I heard about this because this guy who's like a VC somewhere, he goes, back in 2020, our team started to notice a big shift that was going on with like stores, like Walmart, Target, like any big store, was that basically, remember when COVID happened and like the supply chain shut down and like the fucking ship got stuck in the canal and like everything was just bad, like shipping container prices went through the roof. And so everybody had like a shortage right when demand went like through the roof because everybody was at home, everybody was ordering tons of products, and we were all getting stimulus checks and stuff like that, right? So that's like demand went way up to shop because people couldn't go do experiences, and supply went way down, and it was like this crazy situation. And so what happened was retailers basically, they ordered more to try to catch up because nobody knew how long the pandemic and stuff would go. And also like the stuff that got delayed, like finally showed up. But what that created was like this huge glut of excess inventory. Over $1 trillion of excess inventory was kind of like the guess. And so these guys, these venture capitalists sort of noticed this trend, and they posted this 26-page PDF called The Inventory Apocalypse is Coming. And they were just like, look, we are looking at this like a combination of people returning things, the supply chain glut, and then brands over-ordering to try to keep up with like this, the explosion in e-commerce, right? Like there's just too much inventory on hand. And this is all playing out now. Like that was in 2020, 2021, something like that. Now in 2022, if you go look, there's these amazing charts of like, all, if you notice, every brand is like discounting like crazy right now. They're like, oh, 40% off, summer sale, semi-annual sale, like liquidation, whatever. And it's because everybody has way too much inventory to hold. And so, and like Target and Walmart, I think have come out and said some crazy public numbers. Ben, see if you could find it, like how much excess inventory is on the shelves, some absurd number. So anyways, these guys put this out. And at the same time, this startup gets started by this guy, Josh and Dee. And Dee is kind of well known in like the kind of like e-commerce world. And so they go and they start this company. Basically what they do is they're creating like a marketplace or a clearinghouse. So it's called Ghost because it's like any retailer, rather than doing a huge discount, which kind of like, it kind of cheapens your brand. It sort of just pulls forward revenue that like your customers probably would have spent full price, but like in order to move inventory, you kind of like, you gave it away cheaper and you sort of eroded your premium prices or whatever. It basically connects them to the liquidators of the world. So there's like TJ Maxx, Ross, Marshalls, like those types of companies. But there's also just like international versions of those companies. There's like boutiques and wholesalers that could carry your stuff. There's basically like a way to like get rid of inventory that's on your shelf that you're directly selling, and you could sell it wholesale for somebody else to kind of move. You'll take a discount with them, and that's better than giving a discount to your customers who like, then they'll get trained to expect and wait for 30, 40% discounts rather than paying the premium price.
I'm back in. So this is awesome. So, dude,
I knew you'd come back in.
Their site has five words on it and it's beautiful. I look at their site and it's literally five words. We make your inventory disappear. And the way that it looks, I love it.
And there's like a smoky cloud, like a goat, like something evaporated right behind.
Yeah.
And then basically what it seems like what they're doing is they're creating a private marketplace. So this is key, right? Like it's got to be private. It can't be public. And it's a marketplace between your retailer who has excess inventory and these wholesalers and liquidators who will take this sort of like excess inventory. They'll pay, you know, they'll get it at a huge discount and then they'll flip it on their own. That's their business. So it's kind of connecting these two through through this B2B marketplace. And I think the thing is growing like crazy. So I think they said, let's see, in the first year, I believe they got to multi-million dollar net revenue. So not GMV, profitably. And they're like not even launched yet. Like you got to like sign up to do a demo and shit like that with them. But just knowing what I know about like what's going on in e-commerce, I could tell you this thing is going to be big. Like I need to chase these guys down to go invest in this because this is a real problem. And the marketplaces are the best type of internet business. But like it sort of feels like all the good ones are tailed. The good guys are taken. It's like, oh, all the good marketplaces are taken. Like someone did it for, you know, Amazon did it for this, eBay did it for that, you know, Etsy does it for crafts. It sort of feels like there's no marketplaces left. I think this could be one of those multi-billion dollar marketplaces that comes out.
Well, it's not a marketplace. It's just software, isn't it?
No, it's a marketplace. They're connecting buyers and sellers. They're connecting the wholesalers with all the retailers.
But the fee, they don't charge a fee to the people for using their software. It's just they'll set it up for free, which is probably, it's a huge integration process. They set it up for free and then they make the transaction. They make a transaction fee.
That's my guess. So I think it's probably similar. I think one of the closest analogies is a company called Fair, which also does something similar. So Fair is like, I have an e-commerce brand. I want other retailers like, you know, Susie's, you know, gift shop to carry my product. Well, it'd be time consuming to go find all the Susie's corner shops, contact them, sell them my services, create purchase orders and like manage that whole thing. So Fair created a marketplace to do that. And it's a like $10 billion company or something like that. It's like one of the faster growing startups that exists. This is doing that, but more on the like larger liquidator types, like more like the TJ Maxx, Ross, like types versus, you know, just like kind of so-and-so's boutique shop that wants to carry your stuff.
Dude, this is sick. Yeah, you're right. I'm in. This is actually amazing. I'm eager to see how this plays out. There's nothing on the internet about them though. So like when I research it, I can't find a thing.
Yeah, I think they literally just came out of stealth yesterday, basically. So that's how we saw it. Let me tell you, okay, now can I tell you my bad idea? It's also in the e-commerce space. So how do we want to put this? Let me sell you on this. Let me turn on the charm a little bit. Sam, you're a good-looking dude. In fact, I would say whatever you wear tends to look good. I feel like if I almost wore that same shirt, it wouldn't look as good, right? Because you got the body. You don't need to go pay, you know, crazy amounts of money at, you know, whatever, Scotch and Soda, our favorite brand here at My First Million. You don't got to go pay for the fancy stuff because honestly, if you dress in basic blacks and whites, neutral colors, you'll look good. And in fact,
thank you.
There are a lot of people that are out there that may not be as fit as you, but they do subscribe to the same philosophy, which is they're kind of just want to opt out of the fashion game. Like I went to Lululemon to go, I just wanted something that's high quality that fits well. And I went and I found a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. And the shorts were $85 and the t-shirt was like, you know, whatever, $77 for one, right? And so if I just wanted to have really awesome basics, like high quality basics that are premium like material and fit, but I don't care about the brand name. I'm not looking for the status. Where would I go today to get that? Do you have a place in mind where I might go for something like that?
For plain t-shirts, clean, fresh tees. Those are my fave. $10 t-shirts that fit pretty good. And that's mostly it for basic shit.
And so there's that. There's like, let's say Italic. I think Italic does this with, I don't know if you're also an investor in Italic. I am, but like,
no, but
they
I like
do it,
it
with cool stuff like handbags and scarves and like a lot of designer-y type of stuff. It's like a wider selection. But I think that somebody can go create the Costco for clothes. And what do I mean by this? I think you could create a business model that flips it on its head. Instead of paying the 4X, 5X, 6X, 7X markup that you pay today, when you go buy a shirt and you buy a shirt for $25, that shirt probably costs $5 to make.
Is that true?
And so, yeah. So I think on average, you're going to be paying something between 3 and 4X is like a normal markup. And then once you get into like Lululemon and luxury, you're going to be paying more like probably 6 or 7X is my guess here. They're public, so you could go find their actual like margins, but like, let's assume that's.
What about like a Louis Vuitton thing? What about like a $500 Gucci shirt?
Those are different. You're buying those literally for the status. So let's put them as a separate category. I'm focusing on more of like, you go buy something from Nike or from Lululemon or Aloe Yoga or like whatever. These brands that are like, you're just trying to have a high quality version of a fairly basic thing, but there is like some status component. What I'm saying is let's strip away the status. So I'm saying
basic girl stuff.
Yeah. You create a company called Neutral, and Neutral basically just, it opts out of the fashion game. It says, first of all, I don't need your status. I don't need your brand name. Second of all, I don't need your fancy designs. Third, I don't need to pay 5X markups because what a waste. Like, what if I just want to pay for the actual cost of the goods? And so what it is, it's a membership like Costco, where Costco's model is you pay whatever, 100 something-ish bucks a year for the membership. And then they give you all the groceries at cost plus 10%. And the 10% is just their like the labor and the stocking and the stuff it takes to actually like move the goods around. And so because of that, you get incredible value at a Costco. Moms love shopping at Costco for that reason. They're not sacrificing on quality. They just are sacrificing on the fluff, the packaging, the branding, the shelves, the store experience. And they say, screw that. I don't need to have a fancy display in the store. I don't need to have fancy packaging. Like, just give me the stuff raw. I'll pay the actual goods cost plus 10%. And I'll pay you the membership fee because, hey, for me, I make back the membership fee within, you know, my first month or two of shopping with you. I think somebody could do that with all basics for clothing and just say, we're going to go get the same quality as like whatever the highest quality, you know, fit and materials are for like, you know, these fancy Lululemon type brands and just provide it at the actual cost. So you'd be buying like that same shirt for $8 or $9. And it's a step up from like Hanes and H&M or whatever, but you're getting it at, and the marketing is that, hey, you're paying nothing for the brand name. In fact, there's no brand on this. It's like brandless, right? All you got to do is pay the membership fee and make this happen. Now, the counter argument is there was a company that tried to do this called Brandless. They tried to do it with like homeware and shit like that. They went out of business.
I think that was harder. I think it's amazing. I think the problem, there's basically like, I asked myself like two or three questions when I'm like looking at which projects to start. It's basically like, do people want this? And can I pull it off? This one falls into the second category. Do people want this? Yeah, obviously. It's not going to be hard to get people to buy this shit. Can I possibly pull that off? That sounds so challenging. Like, your experience...
Which part seems challenging?
Pulling it off.
Getting the products, like just the logistics of the rest of the
operation. Having tons and tons of SKUs, like that seems really hard. Trying to get members to sign up profitably seems a bit of a challenge. Is Italic able to get... do they have any profit or no?
I mean, I can't really say if they have profit or not, but like, you know, they're doing well as in they're growing. So they are getting members to sign up. People are buying into the value proposition. They're retaining. The question is like, you know, there's some payback period. And is that, you know, if that payback period is like, you know, 1 month, wow, this is one of the best businesses ever. If it's 12 months, okay, you know, it's going to be more cash intensive.
Well, you're the type of business. You have an e-com company. Would you ever work on this?
I wouldn't work on it just because knowing what I know now about e-commerce, I'm like, oh, there's easier ways to win. But if I was going to work in e-commerce, I think an idea like this is a better idea than 99% of e-commerce ideas. Because I think you'll end up with subscription revenue. I think you're differentiated. And I think you appeal to the lowest common denominator. So you're like, you're not like everybody needs shirts. So like there's some brands like Cuts and Fresh Clean Tees. These brands have scaled to like 100 million plus in revenue in, I don't know, 3 or 4 years. And you look at it, you're like, dude, really? It's just a t-shirt brand? And they're doing just the t-shirts like, you know, well, like this. They're not offering it at the factory cost and they're not offering it on subscription, right? So that's a key difference here. But the fact that they've been able to scale that much without it, to me, is like extremely impressive. And it just sort of speaks to the fact that like everybody needs shirts and it's like an everybody problem. Whereas like my e-commerce, or like we talked about Ramon's dog ramp thing, like that only works if you have not only a dog, but a small dog, not even really a small dog, like a small dog that might get hurt and can't get up and down stairs or a bed very easily.
And you want like that dog in your bed.
That applies to me. Like I have three of Alpha Paws ramps in my house because like my dog is like this tiny little baby dog. You have like this massive self-sufficient dog that like, you know, has like a college degree. So like, you know, your dog doesn't need like a hand-me-down to like, they are like a ramp to like, you know, help him up, you know, onto a couch.
Sorry.
Dude, my dog doesn't even drink water from a bowl. I have to like carry her to the sink and my hand is a small bowl. My hand is a small bowl and she drinks only fresh water from my hand.
Dude, just keep it outside for a week. It'll toughen up. Like, that's crazy that you do this.
She doesn't even go outside, man.
How are you so soft, dude? you just interviewed this guy Rich Roll who like does all these interviews and shit, and you're like the least, like you don't even leave your house.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, I did this competition. It was, you know, fantastic challenge, 300-mile run across 3 nights. And like, I was like, what? Like, you know, was like,
I went to Target last week.
Yeah, like, I didn't. I Instacarted from Target last week. But, like, I had to step foot outside to bring the groceries into my home, and it was like my toe got a little cold.
That's fucking hilarious. How are your dogs that bad?
You know, whatever. You know, like, dogs start to look like their owner. Like, you know, my dog is like a spoiled little brat, and I'm a spoiled little brat about life too. I don't know. It's good. We suit each other well.
When my dog was young, like every once in a while, like I would just be like, I'm just not going to feed you until you behave. Like, and it worked.
Dude, my dog doesn't eat dog food, nor does she eat like chicken or like anything that normal. My dog only eats Clover 4% cottage cheese that's freshly scooped into her bowl, mixed with a little bit of dog food with an appetizer bone before it. She won't eat it if you don't do that. She's like, cool, I'll die. Like, I'll just die. If you're fine, blood's on your hands if you just want me to die. Like, she'll go 5 days without eating unless she gets her cottage cheese.
Oh my God, that's your fault. This is crazy. I can't believe you.
For sure it's my fault.
How old is the dog? When will it die?
Oh, whoa, bro, come on.
I mean, like, how long? Here? Like, how long will you?
When will it die?
How long will you own this animal for?
Forever, 100 years. That's how long I'm gonna own my dog for.
Dude, my dog is getting close to dying, and I'm gonna be hilarious, but I'm getting his face tattooed on me, and I'm gonna have a tattoo of a massive pit bull face on my body, and I think it's gonna be like the greatest thing ever. They're gonna like people are gonna. I'm just gonna be like this. This like walking like, what the fuck are you? Like this like yuppie bougie tech guy with pit bull tattoos on him. I'm gonna be like driving. People are gonna be like, they're not gonna know what to think. It's gonna be wonderful.
Yeah, that's gonna be not even in your bottom three worst tattoos.
We're at like 12-year-olds. We should leave.
We should leave. Yeah, Ben, you got to just stop the recording when we cross whatever that line is. You got to just be like we won't even realize that it stopped recording. Just like, yeah, don't worry. For your own good, I cut you guys off. Like,
I gotta be like the ago. Elementary school teacher. Like, Sam, we took a gold star off your chart after that comment.
Yeah. By the way, you weren't here the other day, Ben, and we were like talking about something, and we were like, shit, this sucks without Ben, like our moral compass. We don't know if this is right or wrong.
I'm keeping you guys on the straight and narrow.
All right. Well, what do we think? I think that was pretty good.